So he had a store, besides selling Chinese herb, what else did he sell?
Oh, he had all kinds of merchandise. He had canned goods from China, you know, and dried beans, you know, black beans, Chinese black beans, and salt fish, and solid eggs, you know, what they call hamdan.
Hamdan,
Well, anything you can mention to cook a Chinese meal. So because they, on account of, I don't know how many sacks of rice used to come in almost every month. There'd be dozens of sacks of rice shipped in, you know, from San Francisco, and provisions. You know, they come in big cases.
Uh-huh. And most of his customers, of course, were Chinese, or
it's catering to the Chinese only, you know. But
did he occasionally treat the American people with the Chinese herbs, as you know?
That I wouldn't know whether how many of the Caucasian would go for the Chinese herbs.
But as you remember, were there any Americans?
Yeah, there were some Americans that come and depend on the Chinese doctors.
Mm-hmm.
And none of them that I know of, as far back as I can remember. There wasn't a real Chinese doctor around here, because almost everybody, all the Chinese seem like they know something about what is good for them, what they ask for, when according to their own symptoms or whatever ails them, they'll come and want herbs for whatever it is.
I see.
And somebody will concoct something for them.
I see.
To boil. And they're pretty clever. They know it's exactly how long to boil and what to put in it, you know.
Oh, yes.
But maybe it's handed on. I don't know. In the old country, I've never been over there, so I wouldn't know what the customs were. But it seemed like it just handed down from generation to generation. Don't you think?
Oh, probably. So did he actually sell the herbs and Chinese merchandise for all these years, or he actually changed the merchandise, switched to other kind of merchandise from time to time?
I think it depends on what he considered commodities that moves, you know.
Uh-huh.
If he sells something and there's a lot of calls for, well, he'll continue with that, and then as time goes on, he just increases the variety of different things, either canned goods for something to eat or medicine or what have you.
Was the store always catering for the Chinese, or it was a transition point that the
mostly
selling?
Mostly, because the Chinese at that time were very tightly knit it together, you know. Perhaps
probably
for safety's sake.
Language barrier. And
yeah, language barrier and safety's sake.
Like the Chinese, when you live together, that was for convenience.
Mm-hmm. So when did it turn into like a gift shop? Probably very late. After he passed
at that time, you know, this goes back to before the 1900s, when I got just a little shaver. My dad was selling different things like silk handkerchiefs. we call it handkerchief, we don't use it as a handkerchief, but embroidery, silk, things of that sort, you know, and scarves. Thank you, Johnny. The scarves and Chinese shoes, you know, that were embroidered, you know, with a thick sole. Not only do they sell it to the Chinese women, later on their sole families were living in Chinatown at that time. But they sell it to the Caucasians for gifts. And so that is perhaps the start of the gift part of the story.
And you say that's before the turn of the century?
Yes.
Which means that when you were a
young
boy, they already started.
Yeah, I can remember some of the Caucasians come in and buy these silk handkerchiefs, you know, fancy
embroidery.
Chinese embroidery, beautiful things, I remember. Silk.
I see.
Getting back, going back a little bit, you said that your father started the brickyard to make these bricks. Did he have any knowledge of making bricks somewhere in his childhood, or he just thought it was a good idea and they needed it at that time and he started a brickyard?
I wouldn't know where he got the idea or if it is actually his own method of doing, making bricks, but he seemed to be very good at it and makes the bricks that they were used in several buildings in this town beside the courthouse and roundhouse for the railroad and the Andrews Hotel, the original Andrews Hotel, and a block of the Andrews buildings, law offices and what have you, that are still standing today. I don't mean the roundhouse. The roundhouse been torn down when the SP converted, gradually converted into diesel engines at that time. But when they were, the trains were using steam, the roundhouse was still
there.
In use.
In other words, some of those bricks besides the Olive Store are still in use today. And that's going back to close to 90 to 100 years almost.
Do you remember when he started the brickyard?
No, I don't recall the exact date. My house right now are sitting right on the original brickyard.
Is that
That's
right?
That's the Alois building
store. Alois brickyard, where you and I.
This house right now.
Yeah, right now you're sitting in.
Oh, this one.
This
house. This is
in other words,
350
Lincoln
Avenue.
And from
on
here,
the original brickyard.
And from here to the mountainside, which is about two blocks away, is where Center Street runs into a place where they were taking the clay out from the mountainside. Until that, the clay runs out, you know, clay. What I mean is that the clay is no good anymore, or the bricks won't hold after it's fired, you know, it breaks too easy.
Right.
Well, that means that the clay gave out. So you moved the brick yard to the saddle between this San Luis Mountain, which is right in front of us,
uh-huh.
to Bishop Peak, which is the next little...
Next peak.
Next peak.
Right in the saddle.
Uh-huh.
That is where his second brickyard is.
I see. When was that, when he moved?
They say that he ran... this is just hearsay.
Uh-huh.
They say that he must have run this brickyard for about 18, 20 years before he moved over to the new one.
And then, do you have any idea how many Chinese he employed at that time in the brickyard?
The brickyard, I used to walk over to the brickyard and watch them fire. Very fascinating to see them burn big logs, you know, like tree stumps, you know, they fire the bricks.
Mm-hmm.
And at night, the flame would show up in the sky, you know. It's very fascinating to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I walked from here to the brickyard and watched them.
So when you were born, the second brickyard already in existence? Or was it after?
Yes, I was born in 1893.
Uh-huh.
And I must have been about 8 or 9 years old when I was going to watch the brickyard, how they make the bricks and all that. Done by the Chinese labor.
Uh-huh. Is there many Chinese laborers or any other laborers like Japanese or Mexican or other?
No, there wasn't any Japanese around at that time.
Mm-hmm.
The labor that my dad had on the at the brickyard are practically all Chinese.
Uh-huh.
How many were they that? You know of,
it doesn't take too many.
No, there weren't too many. Mm-hmm.
It doesn't take too many. I imagine not more than 10 or 15 people at one time.
Mm-hmm.
Did these labor all stay in the brickyard around the neighborhood?
No, they have bunk houses.
Mm-hmm.
They had a kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
Dining hall.
Mm-hmm.
And one Chinese cook
mm-hmm.
take care of all the meals.
Uh-huh. And they all stay the same place. And of course, it's very close to the Chinatown, so these people
mm-hmm.
will go back and forth.
Yeah, they can either live in Chinatown, but most of the brick workers live right on at the yard, you know,
uh-huh.
in the bunk houses.
I see. Mm-hmm.
Were about. Do you recollect what their wages were at that time? Really?
Gee, it must be really meager because if they worked for the railroad for about $1.30, 35 cents
a day.
Those brick makers, I don't think they get more than $1, $1.25.
Do they produce the bricks only for the local use, or they actually ship it to other locations?
whatever called for, you know, in case they someone wants to build a brick building.
Mm-hmm.
He would sell them by the, I don't know, I forgot just how much he was charging. I don't think it's more than,
maybe only a couple cents a brick at that time, right?
Yeah, about a penny or a little over a penny a piece.
Uh-huh.
I think about $4 a hundred or something.
Ah.
Like that.
Was that the only brickyard in San Luis?
That's the only one around here, yeah, at that time.
For how long? I mean, he...
He ran that for, let's see, as I say, I don't know when he started,
mm-hmm.
but he ran it until, okay, gentlemen.
You yeah, say the store, the brick building was built around 1874.
1874.
But he had a wooden store for about 3 years.
Mm, about 3 years,
so
I think, before he started to build a brick building.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So he actually ran the brickyard for a long while, until probably after
mm-hmm.
the turn of the century.
Yes, way in the 1900s. And
uh-huh.
If you ran a brickyard for more than 20 years, that's quite a monopoly.
Right.
Because, you know, usually in 20 years' time, something else comes in,
mm-hmm.
right? So that's a
so
pretty long period.
Mm-hmm.
When did he start the seed farm?
When he started the
uh-huh.
seed farm? Well, I know he was in full bloom on the, during the crash. I was 33, wasn't
uh-huh.
it?
Uh-huh. 1930.
29 was the first.
Uh-huh.
Then it lasted, you know, quite some time afterwards.
For the 30s.
29,
all through the
yeah.
all through the 30s.
So he until he went broke, that was the tail end of the seed business.
I see.
But before that, now that was during World War I.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That's right. I think he supplied the army.
Yeah.
With
We were growing.
Beans.
Small white beans.
Mm-hmm.
All our the 8 seed farms were grown, including the seed farm that we were, where our house is standing right now. Turned into when we weren't making bricks, we
uh-huh.
turned it into a seed farm. This was one of the seed farms.
Ah.
That was, we were growing small white beans for the Navy,
uh-huh.
U.S. Navy.
Mm-hmm.
That was during World War I.
Mm-hmm.
1913.
Mm-hmm.
1914.
It went up to 1918, I think. The United States got into the war in 1917, wasn't it?
1917.
The war ends in 1918, so, mm-hmm. and that the farm has started much earlier.
Yeah,
than
long
then.
Before that.
Uh-huh.
You see.
Did you have to help with your father in
I
the farm?
I spent, I was more or less of a straw boss
mm-hmm.
for my dad. I was timekeeper in a couple of the ranches and I spent about 7 years on the farm.
How old were you then? Probably
no,
teenage
let's see.
Or
how old was I?
Early teen?
In the 20s, weren't you?
In the
20s. 20s, okay.
No,
after you graduate from high school, or?
Yeah, in Cal Poly.
Mm-hmm.
I was also working for the theaters
at the same time
in 1913,
mm-hmm.
And then I had to go to school to learn electrical engineering
mm-hmm.
because I needed it in my theater work.
Mm-hmm.
But I was a timekeeper and. And paymaster.
Uh-huh.
I write all the checks, but my dad signs his name to it.
Uh-huh. How many people working in this particular farm? Or you actually managed
eight? Yeah, different groups.
Okay.
Different groups. We had, when a harvest time
mm-hmm.
comes along, oh, you must have 200 people, 250 people.
Oh, that's quite a big group.
But not always that many, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we're short of help, and then I come into town and recruit some of these people
local
that are around the pool rooms and and the saloons, see if anybody wants to work, you know.
Not necessarily Chinese.
No. We had one camp, we had Japanese camp, and another camp we had, another farm we had Portuguese and Chinese, so in some places we had a mixture of different nationalities, so not always all of one type of people.
Do you remember where all these 8 farms located besides this one?
Yes, I can recall.
You can recall them all.
Yes.
Can you tell us?
I can recall the one towards the north here, which is where Camp San Luis Obispo is now situated. That was one of the farms, which is 4.5 miles north of us, towards Morro Bay.
Is that a military base now?
Yeah,
you're talking about Camp St. Louis?
Camp, yeah. Camp
it's a military base now.
I see. And this one here, which is close to town here, close to the heart of San Luis Obispo.
This used to be called the Chinese Gardens. This is part of the Chinese Gardens, right?
Chinese Garden. And then another one just 3 miles south of here. And then towards the...
excuse me, the 3 miles south, is that where the McDonough ends, around that area?
Yeah.
Or near the, there's a kind of a, what kind of a lake in that area, or what?
Yeah, towards, further south.
A little bit
further
farther,
south.
Further
I
south
see.
Of that. About 3 miles distance. We call, in Chinese, the quickest way to describe which ranch it is, they call it San Milo.
Oh, San Milo,
3 miles.
3 miles,
see.
You see. And the Edna one is 6 miles, you see.
Oh,
Edna,
see.
We have...
what do they call that in Chinese?
Lu Mai.
Lu Mai.
Lu Mai.
Lu Mai.
You say Edna?
Edna. Edna. We have 2 ranches down there, see. One of them is about 1,200 acres, and the other one's about 120 acres. In that area, in that district. See. And then further south, towards the Santa Maria River, which is 30 miles from here, we had 3 ranches down there.
Oh, I see.
two of them is where it's called Oso Flaco Valley. Flaco Valley. And another one is near Guadalupe, which is on near the Santa Barbara county line.
So what kind of seeds?
Vegetable seeds and all sorts of flower seeds. And the farm that I spent quite a bit of time, it was situated in Edna, in the Edna Valley. At one time we had over 200 varieties of sweet peas that I had to take care of. And the hardest part is when it's all dried, ready to seed. Everything turned brown, but I gotta keep them separate because you can't mix up one type of seed to
with
another.
The other.
Very meticulous job, and I enjoyed it because nothing like nature. You see that you watch the thing grow up and turn into seed, and then you plant the seed, and then another cycle, you know, mm-hmm. and so on.
So you spend most of the time in Etna, and how about the other ranches? Did your father assign other brothers?
They have different foremen in the different farms, yes. Mm-hmm. Each one of them has its own foreman.
Most of the foremen are Chinese, or?
No,
it depends
I wouldn't
group.
Say. We had an Irish foreman, we had a Mexican foreman,
mm-hmm.
Japanese,
mm-hmm.
and you name it, I think we have.
And they all worked for your father.
Mm-hmm.
He was.
So your father was very enterprising. At the same time, had a store.
He was.
And brickyards and a seeds farm, and that's quite
mm-hmm.
a
running
business.
A Chinatown old.
Running the Chinatown.
Well, he was called the mayor of Chinatown
mm-hmm.
because whenever there's disputes,
mm-hmm.
you know, the Chinese like to gamble,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes they get into fights, you know, and they would come to my dad to settle the argument,
mm-hmm.
and my dad was, well, acting like a judge, you know,
mm-hmm.
Whatever he says, why, it must be right.
Mm-hmm.
So he's
that is a, they accepted it
as a referee.
Yeah, as a referee, and he must know what is right.
So his store actually was like a Chinatown City Hall
mm-hmm.
at that time. Was there any Chinese organization in town at that time? Early, like turn of century when you were...
If I can recall, I don't know anything about the Tongs. Chances are there a lot of, many of the Chinese belong to different Tongs.
Mm-hmm.
But however, we didn't have any disputes as far as Tongs are concerned.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a Freemason, Chinese Freemason,
mm-hmm.
an organization that even today it startles me
uh-huh.
to think about the Chinese Freemason whenever some official
mm-hmm.
comes into town to hold a general meeting, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know how Chinese are, they gab, they talk loud and talk and even shout with each other.
Uh-huh.
During the daytime, especially when they're gambling, you know,
uh-huh.
they holler and to each other.
Mm-hmm.
But when these officials, Chinese Freemason official, comes into town, the whole town just quiet down. Gee, everybody's whispering to everybody else, you know.
Uh-huh.
And I said, what's all the secrecy about, you know?
Uh-huh.
They were going to have an official meeting, you know, and all that, you know, tell me about it. And, gee, you know, it amazes me, you know.
Such a power.
How something like that would
quiet down the whole community.
Yeah, well, the whole community.
What's this Freemason's name in Chinese? What do you call it?
Ji Gong Tong.
So Ji Gong Tong is the big organization in town then?
Must be.
Uh-huh.
Must be. I belong to the Freemasons here in town.
Okay.
The local Masons.
Uh-huh.
King David's Lodge.
Uh-huh.
But I also belong to I first joined the Masons in Taiwan.
Uh-huh.
I was there for a period of time, about 10 weeks, I guess.
Uh-huh.
And during that time, Stella's brother-in-law,
uh-huh.
he was in charge of the Pacific area.
Uh-huh.
He was a grand
secretary
uh-huh. of the Chinese, they call them Pacific area
mm-hmm.
Masonry,
mm-hmm.
and he was in charge. And when I made a remark that I was sure would like to join the Freemasons, and he said, why don't you put in an application if you like it? So I did, but before I left Taiwan, why they passed me as a
member,
gave me my first degree.
So
and then I came back here and completed my first, second, and third degree here. And then I joined this one, so I'm a member of two lodges.
So when was that? When did you go back to Taiwan?
About 12 years ago, I think.
I see.